LBW. Oh, he's got him.
That's well run, or is it? Oh, field, and that's out. That's got to be out. That's beautifully done.
What a great hit. That's unbelievable. That is sensational. Now, this will be interesting.
Short, fine legs.
Hey, welcome to Short Fine Legs, the cricket podcast mature enough to know that the surface of a pitch plays a major role in the outcome of a test match, but can still find the hilarity in elite cricketers looking worse than Witz's fourth 11 after a heavy night in Melville. If you don't get that reference, please fill in any other club's fourth team and any debaucherous suburb of your choice. We've got the big three together, and I'm not talking about England, Australia and India, whose cricket boards are making a mockery of the global game with their vice-like monopoly that is slowly squeezing the life out of every other nation, thus rendering the spirit of cricket a hollow commercialized wraith that haunts forgotten lands in Sri Lanka, South Africa, the West Indies and New Zealand, and tarnishes all semblance of competitive competition. No, I'm talking about me, Daniel Gallen, Nono Pongolo, and Simi Arif, the big three of Short Fine Legs. Gents, how are you?
Shotgun being England, bro.
Okay, I'm Australia then.
Okay, well, I guess that leaves me with India, which I'm fine with because it is the dawn of the Asian century and all future cricket will only be played in India on surfaces resembling the moon. Test matches will be over in two sessions. There'll be no need for 50 overs because teams won't be able to last more than 20 overs.
That's my type of cricket, bro. That's T20 cricket. That's you know how they always have the conversation of how do we get fans into the stadium to watch tests? We found a way.
2-day tests can only happen in India because they already have the money. It will not work anywhere else in the world, especially South Africa.
Well, you say that, and look, let's make no bones about it. That pitch was a joke. That was a pitch not fit for purpose. And yet we have seen similar results, at least similar sessions around the world. I mean, when I was at Lord's when England played Ireland, and both teams were bowled out effectively in a day. I was in Cape Town when Vernon Philander bowled India out within a session. I was at the Wanderers when Dean Elgar and Hashim Amla were getting wrapped on the knuckles and the chest and the head by India's bowlers. So these pitches do happen. It's just because it's spin, does it kind of mess with our understanding of what is an acceptable pitch?
Yeah, probably for me, I'll say it's our mindset. We see green wickets all the time. We've seen South Africa using green wickets to, especially against the subcontinent sides, and we kind of accepted it. But it just feels like it's like this phenomenon that we're still not quite accepting when it comes to a turning ball. And I do believe India are within their rights to obviously use home advantage. But I think when games finish in 2 days, it does raise a different question about how fair the wickets are. But I still have one question that I would love for you guys to kind of... When one team plays three spinners and the other team plays four seamers on the same wicket and the other one horribly loses the game, do we still blame the wickets or do we blame the assessment of the conditions as well?
I want to add my 2 cents. Why can't we just say that Joe Root is a very good bowler?
No one says that.
Yeah. Maybe that is the headline that everyone's missing. Joe Root is actually just a phenomenal. He's as good as Ravi Chandran Ashwin.
Yeah. I don't know if it was you, Daniel, who tweeted that stat about Joe Root's wickets and in comparison to like one of the women cricketers.
He's the 33rd male cricketer who now possesses a 5-wicket haul in test cricket as well as a double hundred.
Well, there we go. Generational is that I call it. Generational. I also think with regard to Nonz's question is that England made up four seamers? Come on, man. You know it's India. Come on. Yeah. That's Jacques Cullis advice, by the way. That's proper Jacques Cullis advice.
I wanted to say it's probably going to get a lot of stick for this. It's as South African as it gets, that kind of decision where you go to the subcontinent and the opposition plays three spinners, but you're like, no, we'll go completely the other way and play four seamers and play one frontline spinner. And for me, honestly, that was the headline more than anything. How do you get it so horribly wrong in terms of your selection? Especially that we've seen that they've got the options. Dom Bess has done really well in these conditions. But where was he in this particular match? If Joe Root can pick up a fiver, can you imagine what a Bass would have done in those similar conditions? Someone who played most of his cricket in turning conditions in Somerset. So he would have been familiar in those conditions. So for me, it kind of raises that. I was very surprised by what England had done. But at the same time, I mean, it's fair for both teams. I mean, India weren't great either. And even Virat Kohli acknowledged that. He said, listen, we were lucky to be on the right side of this result. It could have been different. And both teams, in terms of application, I know the conditions were very tough, but you still have to apply yourself. And that's why I think Rohit Sharma's knock up top was sensational for India, because I mean, not only did he stick it around, he had a clear game plan, be positive whenever it's needed. Defend. I think one thing that we always forget about Test cricket, Virat Kohli also said it, is that you have to trust your defense. And most of the dismissals for England actually were non-turning deliveries. It wasn't even turning balls. It was non-turners. They were in a space where they were playing for something that wasn't there. They're not playing what's in front of them. And I think that speaks a lot about the mindset of the English, where they are currently about batting in these conditions. And I think that's what what management would need to do, just give them clarity and say, guys, you know, you don't have to think about a turn. You play what's in front of you. If a ball does turn and beats you on the outside, that's fine. But at least protect the ball that is not turning. So, yeah, there's a lot of pointers, yeah.
Maybe we England must just look at this, and India should as well, definitely. This is just stat padding for Ravi Chandran Ashwin, the most overrated spin bowler in the world.
Whoa.
100%.
These views do not represent those of short fine legs.
I can't take it outside of India. And on the rare occasions that he doesn't do it often enough. So I said what I said, and if Ravi Chandran Ashwin want to come for me, he can fetch me at Simi Arif on Twitter. He knows me.
Does he follow?
But he does like some of my tweets. He liked it when they were playing over here. I had chatted some shit about him.
He loves your stand-up about I actually can't think of a single joke from your stand-up.
Thanks, bro. I can't think of a single from Ravi Chandran Ashwin outside of India.
All right, let's move on, because I think we can say that one thing we can say is that when India come to England later in the year, we're not going to see a single patch of dry grass. They are going to be bowling on a swamp, essentially.
Well, the difference is now India have also got the bowlers, so they wouldn't be scared of that. That is the difference.
All right, CSA T20 Challenge. We are recording this hours before the Lions take on the Warriors in the qualifier to meet the Dolphins in the final. Let's start with the home side, the Dolphins. I mean, look, maybe I didn't know what I was looking at, but I did not expect them to be so good. Nons, maybe you can start, because you obviously know more than me. I think you had did you have the Dolphins topping the table? No, you had the top.
Nope. I had Dolphins at number 4. Weren't going to make it. So there goes that.
So what's happened? What's the inside line? Why have Dolphins been so successful?
I mean, for me, I didn't have them in my top 3 for one reason. I didn't think they had the batting to complement their really fantastic bowling attack. I don't think they would managed to get enough runs on the board to have Keshav Maharaj and Pranila Subrayan dominating matches. And to my surprise, I think they've managed to get to 150, 160 a couple of times. And what they do really well is they squeeze the hell out of the opposition. Their two spinners give you nothing. And already you're on the back foot, because Keshav has bowled a couple of spells, 4 overs for 12, 4 overs for 10. And if you're not getting more than 30 runs in 8 overs from the two spinners, you are really in trouble. And we've seen Freilich is a seasoned campaigner, he's done really well. And the other guys have chipped in as well. So yeah, it's been I think for me more the batting. We've seen Miller come to the party a little bit more recently, a couple of 50s, which have definitely helped them, but I still feel they're a bit short in runs for me. And I think that one-off game in the final, if someone comes with a really good bowling attack, they still could be in trouble. But they've done phenomenally well to get themselves in the final. And of course, being the home side, they understand the conditions really well.
Sim, yeah, Sim, you tweeted the other day, how do we get to Braj Shamsi and Keshav Maharaj in the same T20 side? And I just want to run through Keshav's stats. 5 matches, 20 overs, 2 maidens. He's gone for 87 runs while collecting 7 wickets, a best of 4 for 15, an average of 12.42, and an economy rate in a T20 cricket of 4.35. I mean, that is sensational.
Got to get cash in. Daniel, I've said this on your podcast so many times. We have the best bowling units in the world. Leave our batting. Let's not focus on that. The team. But the Dolphins didn't surprise me. I knew they would be in the top 3 because they won that Momentum One Day Cup like last summer, I think it was. So I know they've got it in them. But I do know their weakness. I don't think the Dolphins are a chasing team. I don't think they can chase a total. I think if you put 130 on the board and ask them to chase, I think David Miller does what David Miller does, 1-13. I don't think he knocked the ball out the park.
Well, he's looking good, isn't he? He's got an average of 78. He's scored 156 runs. He's got a strike rate of 138. I mean, I'm looking at all the strike rates. Apart from George Linder, who's got a strike rate of 167, no one's really striking more. Well, and Miller 138, so we can round it up to 140. But no one else is really striking at more than 130. Have the pitchers played into the Dolphins' hands?
I think tactics as well. I think tactics definitely have played a part for Dolphins as well. They are a very good bowling unit, and they've been finishing the innings very well. So big Davey Miller has hit Miller time 2 times in a row, and he's done really, really well. It's set those 150 targets, and it's tough. But yesterday against the Titans, let's not forget, if Claassen came in earlier, he could have chased him.
Dan, for me, I'll say the wickets, I think, yes, they have been slightly difficult. But at the same time, I think in T20 cricket, we can't. How long do you hop on the conditions? I think that's been the only concern that I've had about most of the teams. That yes, you by now you should know the conditions are not going to be coming through like the Wanderers or Centurion. Okay, it's fine. But what else could you do as batters to put pressure on the bowlers? And I feel in terms of aggression, especially in the power play, it's been lacking a little bit. And I think most of it, the batters have kind of put it back on the pitch because it's not great. So we're just going to work our way into a decent total, not lose a lot of wickets. And I do feel that, you know, as South Africans, we do tend to maybe sometimes put conditions as like such a high up thing that we forget that putting bowlers under pressure, that can also make them make mistakes. And making mistakes, all of a sudden, you can start to score a little bit more freely than what the conditions suggest. And that, for me, is something that we could still work on and improve on. And just one extra point. Graham Smith had an interview there, and he was speaking a lot about the World Cup being in the subcontinent, and he's being happy that a lot of South African batters had to work hard to score their runs in these conditions. And I think it's important that all of them get familiar with the conditions, but also you need to start imposing yourself in these conditions, because I mean, international cricketers are not going to give you anything. And if you're saying these are the wickets and you can't score, and then we're going to get bowled out for 100 all the time. So we need to come out with plans and formulas of scoring runs, even though the conditions might be difficult.
Nons, as a player, do you think you can help me with an answer to this? I don't think I've seen an innings in this T20 challenge where any set of batsmen have gone out and have scored rapidly or have taken it to the bowling attack. I don't think at all. I think what I've seen innings upon innings is that guys get to a position and they're like, if I'm chasing, I'm going to go big in the last 6 overs. But there's no like I'm going to take the game away in the first six overs.
Yes. I honestly, I've been looking at that power play most of the games. You look at the scores, 150, 160. It's been kind of difficult to chase. So what that tells me is that the new ball is probably going to be the best time to bat because it gets harder and harder. And that emphasizes the importance of that power play. And that's where most of my question marks have come, is that I haven't felt that pressure being applied. I mean, if I think of England and what they do in the power play, Johnny Bairstow, he used to be Hales, all the other guys that open in T20, they put the opposition bowlers under enormous amount of attack or pressure and they crumble. So for me, I think we need to have that mentality and mindset of putting bowlers under pressure. And if sometimes you do lose wickets, you get it wrong. But that's part of the process and the learnings of, and also the template of cricket that we want to play going forward. And that, for me, it just feels like we're not quite clear of what we're trying to do in the power play as South Africans. And we need to get that clear and better. And I think when we do that, I think we have a clear identity and be able to put opposition under pressure.
Can we talk about Robbie Freiling? People listening to this podcast will know that he was involved in, should we say, a disagreement on Twitter about his physique. Let's not beat around the bush. And I think it's fair to say he's one of the larger guys on the side. But as he says, he's passed every fitness test. Whether or not you think he's too large for the game is quite irrelevant, because he is having a really telling impact on the side. I mean, his miserly bowling in those crucial middle overs and towards the back end, he's exerted great control for the Dolphins, and he's striking at around 160 with the bat. I was looking at some old test scores. In fact, he actually was in the team when AB de Villiers made his test debut. So it shows that Robbie Freiling has had a relatively strong career. What's your take on Robbie? And when I ask you that, I don't just mean him as a cricketer, I also mean him as an elite athlete and his physique. I mean, let's talk into the space, seeing as everyone else is. I mean, does it matter what a cricketer looks like as long as he's putting in the performances?
Robbie is a serious season campaigner. He's a fantastic bowler, and he's been doing it for some time at the Dolphins. Those who have played against them will know how hard it is to get runs out of Robbie. And I think for the skill-wise, and is up there, one of the best in the country. And we've seen the role that he's played back end of the innings, how calm he is, how he gets teams over the line in terms of with the bat. And that 160 strike rate doesn't surprise me. And Robbie hits in funny areas, which is kind of also hard as a bowler to bowl to, because you don't know what Robbie is thinking or where he's looking to hit you. So as a cricketer, he's high up there. And I think as South Africans, we've become so obsessed lately. Yes, I agree that the sportsman needs to look a certain way. But at the same time, we can see that you can have guys like Robbie who are not your typical athlete shape. We've seen Sisanda Magala, the same, do really well in terms of what they do as cricketers. And I feel that sometimes we do need to come to the pot and realize that we don't know their struggles of why they find it hard to be in a similar shape as me, for example. Does
going off their nonsense. Yeah?
But I'm saying, do they need to be like me? They don't need to be similar to what we are. But I'm just saying, in terms of the skill level that they have, is they up there with the best? And I think it's time that, like I said, if you're passing your fitness test and you're doing everything that you should be to be on the cricket field, we should accept it. So, I'm fine with that.
Let me put it to you like this, Daniel. You have a doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what marks your doctor got?
No.
But he's a doctor.
Right. So he tells me.
Robbie Freiling's a cricketer. I don't care if his fitness is shit.
Yeah.
If he's overweight. Mm. If he's doing his job. Mm. Now, the argument that comes out after that is, oh, but could he be doing his job better if he was thinner?
Yes.
I don't know, but he's doing a fucking good job right now, right?
Yeah.
So he's doing excellent. And that's me talking about Robbie Freiling, the cricketer. I also think Robbie Freiling is a bit of an asshole, because when I was at school, and I always tell people this, he was post matric and he was the coach of my team under 14 G's, you know. Thanks, Noms. And he made me bat 11 and not bowl. That's the most disgusting thing to happen to a cricketer.
And you still kept your love for the game.
I did. I did. I had words, bro. I had words with the Freiling when I was at school. That's why he didn't make me bat 11. But I mean, the business that he does as a cricketer, bowls well, he helps at the end of the innings. I think it's great. And he doesn't deserve any type of criticism about his body weight and his shape and stuff like that. He does the business on the field.
Right. Let's talk about the Lions. They've got three...
You mean the greatest batting and bowling units
ever? Well, that's it. They've got three batters in the top five run scorers. Reeser's our top with 186. He's averaging 37. And then in fourth place is Rassie van der Dusen, that is. And then in fifth place is Themba Bavuma. And then in the bowling, so Sander Magala is joint top with 10 wickets, but he's actually played one less game than Lungi Ngidi. If he gets one more wicket a day, he goes to the top of the rankings from the same amount of games as Lungi. Still favorites, would you say? I mean, even though the Dolphins beat the Lions, you probably still think that the Lions have the more complete side. Get through the Warriors and then onto the final, right?
They still have to beat the Warriors. I'm a Lions fan. Where I think the Lions are going wrong is that Rickleton hasn't come to the party this tournament. So it's a question someone needs to ask, like, yo, are we going to, in these last two games, get a new batsman in? Because if they beat the Warriors and go on to the Dolphins, they're going to need to get 150.
If Themba Bavuma is in the Proteus side and he's likely position is opening the batting, at least that's the way I see it. I mean, please correct me if I'm wrong. Should he not be opening the batting for the Lions?
It's an interesting one, that because Dan, South Africa have just recently moved Themba to open in T20 cricket. He used to bat three. And I still feel, in terms of the batting lineup that we have, in terms of the team, I would still like to see another aggressive batter next to Quinton de Kock, especially in the power play in India. And I think Themba as a three, for me, it's that solidity that he gives us. He will be able to rotate strike. He'll be able to play spin really well in the middle overs and build the rest of the inning around him. And that means your number four, five. I honestly do believe AB will be in that World Cup at five. He's going to be there. I do believe that. They are. It's just there. It's definitely going. So I in terms of the key, you look at India, of course, Kohli, New Zealand of Kane Williamson, Baba Azam for Pakistan. That a solid number three. You know exactly what you get. If we lose the early wicket, he can come there and adapt and be able to take us through the power play. So for me, the question is, where is South Africa? If I feel his best position for South Africa and what we have should be at three, and so that we can get another partner to Quinton de Kock that will be also as aggressive as him, especially where the World Cup will be in India. So so I understand why the Lions don't play him as an opener. But at the same time, Ryan Rickleton, guys, let's not forget, he's won the Mzansi Super League. He's won the CSA T20. And he's been integral to both those teams' success, scoring runs up top.
He's just in bad form. That's it. There's nothing. He's not a bad cricketer at all. He's just in... he's just not in a purple patch.
Well, do you know what's funny, though? In the momentum... Before he went to Pakistan, he scored hundreds, scored runs, and he was in form before Pakistan. Pakistan has spent 2 weeks on the bench, and he's come back, he can't score a run. So I feel that's also played a role in where he is mentally. He's gone there maybe expecting to at least get one game or be part of the team, and unfortunately, he didn't play a game. I do feel... Maybe that has played a part of the way he is mentally. And I hope he snaps out of it, because I think as a player, what he offers, and you can see the Lions are missing that aggressive player up top is like similar to Quinton de Kock or what he offers South Africa. He takes it on, he puts bowlers under pressure. That allows Reeza Hendricks to be his natural self. So I do.
And you're right, Hans. In Pakistan, we could have used Rickleton. I mean, I think it's it's very cuckabums to take a player all the way there and like not give him a shot, since we were giving everybody a shot. You know, we were playing our like our E, C, D, E, F, G team there. So it just hasn't come right for him in this tournament. And if you're playing to win the tournament and not playing to test out strategies, then you may have to replace him. But you actually gave me a thought that I actually haven't thought about in a long time. When does a South African T20 squad actually play together at all? We've got a Pakistan series coming in April. And then I don't know what we have in between that and the T20 World Cup. But when do we see the likes of a QDK, an opener, a Faf, Bavuma, and everybody that's our team that we're sending? Because I just watched Australia versus New Zealand. I don't know if we have a team, eh, guys?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think sometimes South Africa used to kind of know the 11 early doors. And that used to be problematic for me, because you can have your CSA 220 challenge now and you're almost not regarding the good performances that are happening there. And like, for example, Sisando Magala has stood out. And for me, it's a guy that we definitely need to take to that World Cup in terms of what he offers at the death, bowling 140 in the middle overs. So you do gain certain players in your tournaments. But like, it's important, like you said, at some point, you start playing close to your starting 11 as a unit. And that's why I feel the Pakistan series maybe might be too close because of the IPL and everything that happens with that. But the tour to Ireland later on, I think it's in June, going forward, I do believe that those will start being the indicators of what Boucher is thinking of in terms of his 16 going forward. And also, Graham Smith has mentioned that India will also be coming to the party with more games to come in the next couple of months as well. So I'm interested to see the rest of the fixtures that will be coming out for South Africa.
My follow-up to that is, name the time South Africa have played a full team T20 11.
I mean, that's a tricky one, because and we'll get to Chris Morris later. I mean, for me, Chris Morris is in the side, and like Non said, AB de Villiers, if he's fit and playing cricket, he obviously is in the best side. It's a tricky one, because you do wonder what is the point of domestic cricket, right? Everything has to have a point. You know, there have to be lessons learned and wisdom imparted. So what have we learned from this T20 challenge, right? We've learned that Kesha Maharaj is a very good bowler. We've learned that the Lions possess very good batters. We've learned that Sisando Magala is a very good bowler. And we've learned that maybe some big names in the Titans might be very good in Test cricket, but actually aren't up to scratch in T20 cricket, and perhaps have been getting into the side on reputation. And if I can, I'll maybe single out Aidan Markram, who doesn't look the same white ball player that he is as a red ball player. So my question, to answer your question, something with a question, I'm going to send it back to Nons. What have we learned from this T20 challenge? If we can glean any information, what exactly is it?
First of all, the importance of having a plan in T20. What's happened at the Titans is we've got a bunch of quality cricketers. We're going to just somehow put them in a team and they'll do the business for us. Yes, it's an individual kind of base sport, but at the same time, you need team plans. And I don't believe the Titans have been really strong in terms of their identity in playing T20 matches. And I do agree with you in terms of Adeen Alga, for me, I don't believe is going to win a lot of games in T20 cricket. Quality cricketer in terms of Test cricket and what he offers, and also in terms of where Aidan Markram is in his white ball cricket, it doesn't seem to be quite sure where he is. And I think he also needs to figure out, because again, the type of cricketer that he is, I think the country always be getting a quality player when he's in form and he knows exactly what he needs to do. And I'll take it back to, I mean, it's my team, unfortunately, the Lions. I know exactly what, in terms of the identity, what happens, the plans, the importance of, I've mentioned Ryan Rickleton and Reeza Hendricks. It's one of the best opening partnerships in the country. for a reason. They've been playing together for a while and they average over 50 together. And the reason for that is that the identity and the clarification of their roles. Riza is the guy that will knock around, gets occasional boundaries. He plays with style. Rickleton is the aggressor in the partnership. He's the guy that takes the attack to the opposition. That identity has always been clear, and they've been opening in Whitepool cricket for past three seasons together. And Themba Bavuma is the guy that gives them solidity. He comes in at three. He knows his role. You've got Rusty van der Dussen who comes and takes it to the opposition as well. So in terms of the top four, it's clear it doesn't change for the Lions. It hasn't changed for the last three seasons. I've loved the addition of a Mulder of yesterday's game because he's one of the best fives. He can also hit a long ball, and he's also very clear in terms of what he needs to do. So for me, I look at that in terms of when I watch the other teams, what are they trying to do in the power play? Who's the guy that is looking to take the game to the opposition? Who's the guy who's going to come in late and finish games? That's why I mentioned that Delano Potgieter. Yes, he hasn't done that in the competition, but I know what his role is and what he can do. And I try to use that same template and look at the opposition. I don't get to see that. And that's why I've been saying that the Dolphins I've been worried about, because in terms of who's the guy that always going to give them runs, I don't know. And I feel that for me is that.
Nons is right, but there's the only thing I can say, there's only two teams in the T20 challenge that actually have had like strategy, like plans. And this is where the only part I disagree with Nons. I think the Dolphins and the Lions are the two teams. The Dolphins knew what they know when they've got 150 a few times now, especially in their last two games. They get Miller in there. He's there early. The Saral Irvia is doing very well up top. And then he sets himself up and then he releases in the end because they know if they get 150 on the board, they've got the bowlers. They know that. Same with the Lions. They chase down that target against the Cape Cobras. It was a very good Zubi Hamza, a 70-odd. But I'm just like, they chased down and they knew what to do in the chase. And those are strategic and well-thought cricket teams. When they go into the game, they know what they're doing. And you can see the difference between them and the Titans. Because the Titans go into a game, they'll send Khalim up the order knowing they have to win this game. And they know what they have behind them. They've got a Chris Morris and a Clarkson. So no in-game management, which comes to the topper of my thought. There's not enough of a cricket South Africa going, hey guys, this is the way we want to play cricket at this next T20 World Cup. We want to do this. We want to have an opening pair that's going to take the bowlers on in the first six. We're going to get Davey Miller in from the 12th over onwards, and he's going to set it up for us and everything in between. And then our bowlers are going to come and they're going to tighten it. If we get to 140, 150, we know we're in this game. Anything more than that, we know we've got this game.
So Sim, you're a Lions fan and Nons, you're a Lions player. And I'm a Lions fan. Yeah, I'm a journalist, first and foremost. But would it actually be better for cricket South Africa, for the Proteas, if the Dolphins win this competition? Because I've got a feeling that if the Lions, because the Lions in a way represents what you'd expect from a South African team, fast bowlers, stroke makers up front, and a handy middle order of all rounders. Whereas the Dolphins are relying on spinners. They've got a guy like David Miller who people are on the fence about. You know, they've got a guy like Robbie Freilich who has the physique of a cricketer. Who we don't really want to see. So in many ways, the Dolphins are challenging some preconceived notions of what South African cricket is about. That if they went and won this competition, and you'd like to think that the powers that be at Cricket South Africa have put on this competition so they can learn something. If the Dolphins go and win it, does that not then give the powers that be something to think about and say, okay, well, maybe this is how we got to build our strategy?
I mean, I'll also say yes. Dolphins won because of COVID, they won the momentum before the semi-final finals were played last year. They shared the momentum again with the Lions this year. They've got themselves to number one in the CSA T20 challenge. On top of that, they don't have a single player, a single batter in the top 10 of runs in the competition currently. There's no one. So that means from number one to eight, they found a way somehow to contribute and win games, right? They're playing at home. And what I've loved about the Dolphins is that they accepted who they are. They know that they've got a Keshav, they've got a Subrian, they've got a Mutasami, and most South Africans struggle to play these spinners. And they've used that as their way of winning white ball matches. And for the last three seasons, every opposition has found it difficult. And that, for me, in terms of what they've done consistently in the past 3 years, I think there is some sort of reward that they deserve. But we also know the game doesn't always give you what you deserve. You want them to, at some point, get the recognition for the work that they've done. But at the same time, I will say, might be a big question mark in terms of how we've played spinners in this competition. And that's probably going to be an argument or a discussion for another day. So that those are a couple of the pointers that I would mention.
I just want to add, Daniel, is that the Dolphins are a very good outfit. And they're also not playing with Mr. Big Match temperament himself, Andile Petlakwayo. I think they would have, with Andile Petlakwayo, I think it would have been a great Dolphins team. But no one's just right. They manage to put runs on a board, and they know what their bowlers can do, and they've done it consistently. And maybe it's time to acknowledge that South African batters have no idea of how to play spin.
Well, I think that's pretty common knowledge, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, what do we do? Like, that's what I'm saying. Cricket South Africa should then be going, okay, guys, field two spinners, please. Teams need to play spinners. We are going to India. People are going to show us a flame over there.
I had two questions about when you, as this was a bit earlier, you mentioned a Keshav. And I think we're forgetting that, is Imran Tahir still eligible to go to the World Cup? I think we've forgotten about him. And that potentially could be Tahir and Shamsi, our two spinners. We know that Alinda has done well. And as a South African, we know for a fact that we can't have two spinners that can't contribute with a bat. That is a South African thing that we love to do. Instead of going, let's say, we're going to go and play our best five frontline bowlers and the batters need to do their job and win the game. That's it. We always want to try to find the balance. And that's where I believe Linda comes into the party a little bit ahead of Maharaj. I promise you. It's just, it's a South African thing. I know we love extending our batting lineup. In terms of extending the batting lineup, I see a Linda just being ahead of Maharaj. And I love the fact that Maharaj is asking the right questions.
The key to our success at this World Cup is getting Kesh in the squad. He's a thinking cricketer. He's a good bowler. And if you have Kesh, you have to choose between Shamsi or Tahir. I don't think there's a space for Linda, because if Chris Morris is on that plane, my man, if George Linda is next to him, George Linda must tell us what the recipe for the Powerade he's bringing in onto the field during drinks break. And I'm not being shit over there. I'm just saying, yo, dog, it's tough. We are going to need our best spinners over there to win this T20. We've got an incredible bowling lineup, but we must understand we're going to be bowling. We won't be batting deep. We've got a Rabada, a Nokia. We've got a Shamsi, a Magala, a Sipamla.
This is the thing, sir. Maybe we don't have a Nokia and anyone else. Maybe we select Morris as the seeming all rounder, Rabada as the out and out bowler, and then you go Linda, Shamsi, Tahir. You know, three spinners. Why not? If this last test has taught us anything, is that we need to change our preconceived notions of what cricket is about. If the Dolphins rise to the top, we have to change our understanding of what a South African cricket team is about.
You see, Dan, the only way for me we can be able to get three spinners is that one of the batters can contribute with the ball. And there are a few of those. In terms of up the order, the guys that can come up the top and be a number one to a three, for example, is a John Smuts that I can think of. Mutasami of the Dolphins, who's you know. But I'm just saying, those are the few batting all-rounders that we have in the country. So that's the only way we can get three spinners in the team. I don't believe South Africa would ever go to a match with three front line spinners. That would definitely be a no-go, unless someone up the order had to offer two overs of spin. So I'll say that.
All right, look, fair enough. And I guess it also comes down to who wins the thing, right? And if the Dolphins go and win it, when is it, tomorrow, as we're recording it, if they go and win it, that will have that will change things. If the Lions go and win it, that will change things. Hey, the Warriors are still in with the show. We're recording this before the Lions and the Warriors play in that playoff.
Have we tested Tabrai Shamsi at number two? I haven't seen him bat a lot in this tournament. So I just want to know if
I don't think anyone wants to see Shamsi bat, to be honest with you.
All right, listen, if we're talking about Shamsi batting, I think we have reached the stage in this podcast where we have run out of things to talk about, surprisingly. Listen, no Pongolo, Simi Arif, I'm Daniel Gallen. This has been Short Fine Legs. Catch us on Twitter at @short_fine_legs. You know what our Twitter handles are. Thanks to PSC Podcast for continuing to produce the show and showing us lots of love. We'll catch you next week. Ooh, if you are still with us, we have a very special guest for next week. So do keep an eye for that. Cheers.
Shout for OBW. Oh, he's got him. That's well run. Or is it? Oh, a fielder. That's out. That's got to be out. That's beautifully done. What a great hit. That's unbelievable. That is sensational. Now, this will be interesting.
Short, fine legs.